You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in today for Tom Hartman. Great to be here. Eric, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike.
Great to have you here as well.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right, well, listen, at the outset here, Eric, we have a special guest on the line. His name is Peter Schiff, and Peter is a libertarian financial advisor and also author and host of the Peter Schiff Radio Show, and we're going to be talking a little bit about minimum wage today. So without further ado, let's get to our guest, Peter. Peter, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on your program.
Oh, it's great to have you, Peter. Well, listen, there's a lot of controversy going on right now in this country with respect to a living wage, a minimum wage, and Walmart. There was an article, I don't know if you saw it, Peter, today, that said that they would not buy back their own stock. I think they bought back billions and billions of dollars of their own stock recently, and they announced that at a shareholders meeting, that had they not done that, they would have had the cash on hand to actually pay their workers $5-6 more an hour, up into $14.89 an hour. So just wanted to open up the conversation with that, Peter. What are your thoughts on
that idea? Well, I
think that's
relevant to the discussion of the minimum wage, you know, what Walmart decides to do with its profits. You know, the profits belong to the shareholders. The workers get compensated by wages, so, you know, they get paid whether or not Walmart makes a profit. But the problem with the minimum wage law, you know, the most important rule in economics is supply and demand. And if you look at a demand curve, as price goes up, demand goes down. I mean, that is an economic law. So when you have a minimum wage and you raise the price of labor, you simultaneously reduce the demand for labor. And what you end up doing is pricing out of the labor market the least skilled individuals, and so you get more unemployment. So nobody is helped by the minimum wage, least of all the people that need to get skills, that need jobs desperately so they can increase their skill level and earn more money. You pull the bottom rung of the job ladder out from under them, and they can never climb on.
Well, let me ask you this, Peter. I mean, because obviously, you know, I understand what you're saying about the supply demand, and that obviously if the wages are going up, perhaps the demand might be less. But what about the other side of the equation? Because you can't isolate economic laws as though they exist in a vacuum, right? I studied a little bit of economics back at NYU back in the day. And, you know, obviously if people have more income, if they have more disposable income, then isn't it true that the more money you have, you can inject that into the economy and that grows the economy?
No, that spending money doesn't grow the economy. It's savings and production that grow the economy. And if you keep people out of the labor force because you've priced them out of a job, that weakens the economy. So what we need is more.
Peter, are you actually saying that that consumer spending doesn't influence the economy, doesn't grow our economy?
That's what I'm saying. Consumers spend as a result of economic growth, not the other way around. But what are the things that people forget? Let's assume that
you got to help me with this because I don't understand this. So what you're telling me is that if a consumer has more income, more disposable income, and that they take that money and they go out and they buy milk, they go out and buy a car, they go out and buy a home, are you saying that doesn't grow the economy, that
No, what grew the economy was the ability of that worker to earn that extra money. When he goes out and spends it, he's cashing in on the economic growth. The economic growth precedes the spending. The spending is the icing on the economic
growth. Right, so if nobody spends nothing in this country, what you're saying is there'll be economic growth.
No, well, then people will save and invest, but everybody is going to spend because that's why people work. You work because you want to buy stuff. But buying the stuff doesn't grow the economy. But let's focus.
No, Peter, I'm not going to accept this premise. I've never heard of this.
Do you want to talk about the minimum wage?
I do, but I want to talk about the minimum wage. But from what you're telling me, this is a novel concept that I've never heard of in the law of economics. So you're saying that consumer spending, which accounts for what percent of the GDP would consumer?
Well, GDP is not the economy.
No.
It's about 70%.
All right. So consumer spending is 70% of the gross domestic product, and you're saying that that consumer spending has no effect on economic growth.
It has an effect on GDP, but I'm not talking about the real economy. But if consumers spend money now, that borrowed money, it's not going to grow the economy. But I know what you're getting at. You're saying that if we just raise wages, that people will have more money and they'll go out and spend it, and somehow that's going to help the economy.
Well, it does.
No, let me tell you. If you mandated these higher minimum wages, mm-hmm. some workers would earn more money at the expense of other workers who earn no money because they would lose a job completely, so they would have no spending. Meanwhile, prices would go up, so when you go out and spend money, you would buy less stuff. So that would hamper economic growth. You're always talking about Walmart, right? People shop at Walmart because they want low prices. Well, mm-hmm. if they just overpaid their workers, they wouldn't have low prices. They would have higher prices, and so the people that go to Walmart wouldn't be able to buy as much stuff. You know who benefits from low prices? Poor people, middle-class people.
Yeah, well, but no one's disputing that, Peter. No one's disputing the fact that, you know, that businesses, you know, have a right to make a profit, and businesses have, you know, a right to kind of sort of have control over the wages that they pay their employees. But I guess what we're talking about here is not overcompensating workers to the point where it's going to destroy business. We're talking about a minimum wage, a floor, something that is bare minimum, so that if a worker works a 40-hour week, that at least they can go out and, you know, support a family, support a child.
There are a lot of jobs, though, that don't support families. There are a lot of jobs that people get when they're in high school. They're still living at home. They're being supported by their family.
Okay.
Not every job has to support.
Well, fair enough.
And you can't legislate that into existence. You know, Walmart in Washington D.C. They just advertised jobs, right, for $8.50 mm-hmm. an hour. They got so many applicants, like 20,000-30,000 applicants mm-hmm. for 600 positions. The article says it's harder to get a job at Walmart than to get into Harvard. So there's lots of people who want these jobs. Clearly, Walmart isn't underpaying. If they were underpaying, they wouldn't have any applicants.
Well, no, that's not true, Peter. I mean, if people are desperate, that's like saying, you know, if somebody was, you know, really, really hungry, they'd eat morsels if they would, right? They wouldn't say, no, I'm not going to eat because it's not a full meal. It's not
Walmart,
a three-course meal.
If Walmart is offering these individuals the best job they can find, why criticize it? You know, if you force Walmart to pay $15 an hour, they might not hire any of those people. They might not even open up that Walmart.
Or maybe, well, that's not true, because if they want to continue their business and they have a Walmart store, the only thing that's going to happen is that the Waltons, who own Walmart, are not, instead of being worth, you know, maybe $50 billion, they might be worth $49 billion. So, I mean, $1 billion can go a long way in hiring workers and creating jobs.
Why can't the market, why can't workers and employees negotiate among themselves without the government interfering and agree on a wage? And
well, that's what they're trying to do, and that's why Walmart is union busting. They're trying to actually get the workers together, organized, so that they can negotiate a fair living wage with Walmart, but Walmart won't let that. Do you agree with unions? Do you agree with
unions?
Peter, do you
has no minimum wage, and their unemployment rate is
1.8%. Do you agree with unions? Do you agree with unions?
I don't agree with government protecting unions, where they can extort their employers. So I don't agree with the type of situation we have now. If workers want to unionize, that's fine, as long mm-hmm. as an employer can fire people without unions, you know, shutting down their shop, and as long as employers are free to hire non-union workers if they want to. I don't like these closed shops where the unions can basically strong arm and blackmail their employers. But I want to bring up, you look at like Singapore, they have no minimum wage at all, and they have 1.8% unemployment. There are other countries that have no minimum wage.
And what's the average wage in Singapore? What do they make per?
Oh, it's much higher than it is in the United States.
What do they make hourly?
How about they have the highest concentration of millionaires in the world?
No. That's what I want to ask you. You said it's 1.8% unemployment. So I want to know from you, what is the hourly wage in Singapore for the workers?
I don't know. It's higher than America, but I don't know what
it is. All right, why do you hold on, Peter? Do you got time for one more segment?
Look at how we destroy.
All right, Peter, hold on. Just hold on. We're going to have you come back take time to look up the wage, okay? We'll be back here with Peter Schiff. We're talking about minimum wage, livable wage, workers' right to make some money, and Peter's contending that consumer spending really has nothing to do with job growth. I just don't understand that, but we'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to Win 101.5.
Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. The Postal Service is making one of the most substantial changes in years, expanding to Sunday parcel delivery. Jesse Russell reports.
The Postal Service is undergoing a significant change as it moves towards Sunday parcel delivery. The announcement comes after months of debate on Capitol Hill regarding postal reform, which included not expanding, but contracting delivery by eliminating Saturday service. The program will start with Sunday delivery of Amazon.com packages and is launching in Los Angeles County and New York City. John Beaumont is president of the California State Association of Letter Carriers.
We've just hired recently approximately 35,000 career carrier assistants. Now, these are new employees. They will become career after they've been in the service for a little over 2 years after someone retires. And as they come in, these jobs, especially the Sunday jobs, a lot of them are going to the career carrier assistants. Of these career carrier assistants, almost 25% of them are United States veterans coming back from the Middle East.
He said the addition of Sunday delivery will give the Postal Service an advantage over UPS and FedEx.
Amazon.com tried to work with some of the other companies, and they didn't have the network to go ahead and handle this and get it out. So it's not like this service was offered exclusively to the post office. It actually was, I understand, it was either actually to FedEx or UPS first, and our network was actually able to handle it better to get out there.
Hundreds of taxi drivers in the Teamster-affiliated Washington, D.C. Taxi Operators Association are accusing the D.C. Taxi Cab Commission of stifling speech. The commission required written testimony in advance because some commissioners say it's hard for them to understand some people with accents. The union cab drivers say that explanation is abhorrent, discriminatory, and unlawful. The union taxi drivers were at the meeting to protest what they say is unfair towing and ticketing of cabs. The union wants D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray to direct the commission to immediately halt its practice of requiring written testimony in advance. Three Democratic U.S. senators and three Democratic U.S. representatives have introduced the Women's Health Protection Act of 2013. Senator Tammy Baldwin says the act protects the constitutional reproductive rights of women to make their own private health decisions. Baldwin says it will, quote, protect a woman's right to safe and legal reproductive health services by stopping restrictive regulations and laws, such as those in place in states including Texas and Wisconsin, intended to curtail reproductive health services for women, end quote. I'm Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent News. Since 2002, Workers Independent News has put worker voices and issues on hundreds of radio stations. But unless we raise enough money very quickly, that ends November 15th. So please go to laborradio.org and click donate now to save when. Madison, Wisconsin-based Workers Independent News was in the thick of the 2011 Wisconsin worker uprising that inspired the world. Inspire us now by saving Workers Independent News. Laborradio.org and click donate. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I'm Jim Javinski here for Tom Hartman on the news. You need to know this. Our nation has seen the dangers of coal mining and drilling for natural gas, but few of us have heard of coal gasification. That's because it's a highly dangerous process of creating synthetic natural gas by setting coal on fire and injecting it with oxygen and water. And if an Australian energy company has their way, Americans may become very familiar with this dangerous process. Link Energy is just one step away from starting the first coal gasification project in our nation in Campbell County, Wyoming. To make matters worse, they want to try this treacherous process while the coal is still deep underground, and the project would take place near a major regional aquifer. That's the way it is today, Tuesday, November 19th, 2013. I'm Jim Javinski, here for Tom Hartman on the news.
Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman program. We're going to be talking about Tom's new book just out, so just stay tuned for some of the specific information on that just a bit. But we do have a guest, Peter Schiff, libertarian financial advisor and author and host of the Peter Schiff radio show. So we want to have Peter back and continue this discussion about minimum wage. I think there should be maybe even a livable wage. But in any case, let's just get back to Peter. Peter, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Good. All right. So anyway, you know, I don't have the information on Singapore. Were you able to look it up, or
you know, I looked up per capita personal income in Singapore, and I got something that came up that had it as number three in the world. But then when I looked at it, it does their per capita GDP, which is close to per capita income, which is $60,410 per person. But they've got about the highest incomes per capita in the world, other than a sheikdom. You know, I think the only other places where people maybe make more, places like Qatar, But
yeah, well, but what Eric is saying, Eric, you said you looked it up.
I looked it up, and the SGD, or Singapore dollar, minimum wage is about $4.02.
No, there is no minimum wage in Singapore.
Well,
they're saying with the hourly wage. We wanted to find out what the hourly. So it's roughly
it was an hourly wage.
It's about $4 an hour. So
the average wage in Singapore. It's much higher than that. There are probably some people that have jobs at that rate. But you know, you have to also remember the very first minimum wages that were ever passed were specifically passed to prevent people from working. They were passed. To either it was minorities or lower skilled workers, but it was specifically to make it illegal for certain people to work. That's why they came into existence. And if you look at what we just did to American Samoa, we recently, a few years ago, imposed our minimum wage on Samoa, and we destroyed their entire economy. As a result of that, their two largest employers shut down, and the island went into a depression. You've got 20, 30% unemployment. You've got lots of inflation. We destroyed their whole economy with a stroke of a pen. We passed the minimum wage law and we decimated their job market. You know, it sounds great to talk about, oh, we all want people to earn more money. Well, they have to get more skills to earn more money. You just can't legislate a higher wage. All you end up doing is condemning people to permanent unemployment.
But not if you're legislating a minimum wage, floor.
That's exactly what happens. You have to meet that minimum standard to get a job. So if the minimum wage law says the minimum wage is $8 an hour, if you're only worth $6 an hour, if somebody can say, well, if I hire you, if I pay you more than $6 an hour, I'm going to lose money on you. Because what you're doing, your marginal productivity is $6 an hour. Even if I'm willing to hire you at $6 an hour, I can't hire you at $8 an hour because I'll lose money if I hire you at $8 an hour.
So you think it's okay then, Peter, like, for instance, I have a lot of friends who work in the service industry, and they make like $2 an hour, you know, and then.
How can they make $2 an hour when the minimum wage is much more than two?
Well.
They don't
No,
$2.
Not in the service industry.
$2 an hour.
No, the service industry is not required to pay.
Yes, they
if,
are.
If that's not,
the only
not my understanding.
In the service industry that don't get the minimum wage are waiters and waitresses that work on tips.
That's what I'm telling. Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
I'm saying
not,
the service industry.
Lots of tips. They're not getting.
Well,
not
but they're not. But
$2
that's not guaranteed. No, but what I'm saying is that they're not guaranteed that tip.
That isn't guaranteed. Have you ever gone to a restaurant and not tipped the waiter?
Yes.
What, you
well,
know?
Well,
now you're arguing for the middle.
That wasn't me, Peter. That wasn't me. That was Eric. I've always tipped, even with bad service. I tip. No, but this is what I'm saying is that you don't have a minimum, so you can go to work and know you're going to put in 8 hours of work and you're getting $2 an hour. You know, from your
nobody is working for $2 an hour.
No. Listen. What I'm saying, you're saying tips. You're not guaranteed that wage.
But if you don't get the tips, you're not going to show up. Waiters are not going to work for.
I know, but what I'm saying is you're okay. I'm just trying to paraphrase here. You're okay with somebody with, say, a bar owner who has a server and says, I'm going to pay you $2 an hour, and that if you have a bad night and for whatever reason, you know, people just don't want to tip you and you make zero tips for that night, it's a slow night, tough deal. Even though the owner, you know, the client bought drinks and they bought food and the owner made a lot of money from that, but the worker ends up just with the $2 an hour, so they make $16. So what I'm just asking is, you're okay with that? You're saying that's okay.
I'm okay with allowing that worker to choose if he wants that job or not. I mean, an individual is in a better position than the government to know whether a job is worth the effort.
So you're okay.
Work there. Who am I to second guess?
Right. No. Okay. And you're okay. So you're okay for two things. You're okay for the worker to have the freedom, the liberty, and the choice to decide where he or she wants to work, but you're also, you know, in favor of the owner, the business owner, to exploit the worker and pay zero wages.
Look, if I offer somebody a job and they take it, right, that's not exploitation. If I force you at gunpoint if I hold your wife hostage and say, you do this job or I'm going to kill your wife, now you can talk exploitation. But if I hang out a sign that says, you know, help wanted, and somebody shows up and I tell them what the terms are, and they say, yeah, that sounds like a great job, I want it, there's no exploitation there. You know, if they could get a better job someplace else, they would do it. And everybody can work for themselves. There's nothing that stops somebody from being self-employed. But if they can make more money working for somebody else and they choose to do that, nobody's being exploited.
Well, I think some people would beg to differ on that, Peter. I think there's millions and millions of workers who want to see livable wage laws and things like that.
I once had if somebody decided that they wanted to pay, let's say I wanted to open up a restaurant, and I actually wanted to pay all my workers $15-$20 an hour, mm-hmm. the busboys, the guys that mopped up, the guys that washed the dishes. If I did that, right, my prices would be so high. Nobody would eat in my restaurant. You know, the most bleeding heart liberal is still going to go to my competitors because he's going to say, you know, I really like that guy, Peter Schiff. He pays his workers a lot, but, you know, damn, his hamburgers are so expensive. I just can't eat there. You know,
all right.
I'm sorry. I'm going to go eat at the other restaurant. See, the reason that everybody needs low wages is because consumers want low prices.
All right. Peter, we got to run. We got to run. So I appreciate it. You have Peter Schiff here, and Peter's positing, ladies and gentlemen, just paraphrasing real quickly, that you can have a service industry of millions of workers who get paid $0 and go home with no money in their pockets, and somehow or another, that's going to grow the economy. All right, Peter, we appreciate it. Thank you very much. Listen, we'll be back with more of the Tom Hartman program in a minute.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and I believe that workers do deserve at least a minimum wage, if not a livable wage. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman program. You just heard about Tom's book, The Crash of 2016. Tom's actually on tour, Eric, touring the country.
Yes,
crisscrossing. That would be so appropriate. Hopefully we're going to get Tom in maybe tomorrow or Friday to talk more specifically about the book, because after speaking to Peter Schiff, I could see why Tom has written a book called The Crash of 2016, because with libertarian financial thinking like that, I can't imagine the economy not crashing, Eric, if you have all of these millions of. But before I do that, let me just tell you about Tom's tour. Tom, actually, tonight, Wednesday, November 20th, he'll be up in, what is that? Lee Monica Theater in Santa Monica, California. That's 1332 Second Street tonight. So for all you listeners in California, in Santa Monica in particular, you can go meet Tom tonight from 7 to 9:30. He'll be there talking about his book. And again, that address is 1332 Second Street in Santa Monica, California. And then tomorrow, he will be November 21st from noon to 2 in the Commonwealth Club on 595 Market Street, San Francisco, California. Friday, he will be up in Portland at, where is this, the Powell's Bookstore, 1005 West Burnside Street. That's in Portland, Oregon. And then wrapping it up on Tuesday, December 3rd, he'll be at Politics and Prose. That's 5015 Connecticut Avenue, Northwest Washington, D.C. So obviously, Tom making a lot of stops, and I would encourage all of the listeners and the fans, if you happen to be in any of those areas, go check them out. And we'll keep updating you on this throughout the program, where Tom's going to be about the book. But also, we got a lot of people right now on the Freedom Lines, too, Eric. People were very
probably
angry about what Peter Schiff had to say and about the minimum wage or the lack of a minimum wage. But before I get to the callers, let me give you the number for the Freedom Lines, 1-866-987-THOM. Again, 1-866-987-8466. Look, Eric, you and I both know a lot of people who are in the service industry, and they're always lamenting to me that, you know, they literally get like $2 an hour,
right,
$2.50 an hour.
They're working three service jobs to make ends meet.
Right. So in other words, say you worked 10 hours, you know, at $2.50 an hour. That's $25. And you're not guaranteed tips. I mean, and it's not unusual where I've heard some workers say, you know, they practically got no tips at all for like a 8-10 hour shift. So what Peter's premise is that's somehow good for the economy, that a worker putting in 8 to 10 hours a day, going home with, you know, $20-$25 in their pocket is somehow good for the economy. And that's where I completely disagree with him. I mean, the bottom line is this, and this is why I was trying to say, what he's doing, Eric, is he's taking supply-demand curves and isolating it. He's putting it into a vacuum as though it doesn't exist with the other components of the economy.
Right.
And that's why I was trying to say, you know, look, Peter, let's be honest about this. What is the major driver of the economy? And it is, without question, consumer spending. If you don't have consumer spending, you don't have a thriving economy.
Right. How can a business stay in business if nobody's spending?
If nobody's buying their products, nobody's buying their services. And he kept trying to say, well, that's not what creates economic growth. He says, what you're talking about is GDP. Yeah, what I'm talking about is the gross domestic product, and 70% of the gross domestic product comes from consumer spending. But when consumers spend, where's that money going to, Eric? It's going to other businesses, right? Business owners, small business, medium business, big corporations, you know, entrepreneurs.
Where would Walmart be if there were no spenders?
Right. But what he's saying is that what drives an economy, what creates economic growth, which I don't understand at all, is savings. You know, how does savings create economic growth?
That sounds like something a bank would say.
Right. Right. Well, because it creates economic growth for the bank.
Right.
Because they're taking your money.
And they're giving you, what, like 1%
right.
interest?
But that's what I'm saying. You can't have growth through savings. So in other words, look, this is what Walmart has done. And I was trying to get to that particular point where at their shareholders meeting, I think it was, you know, the last quarter or whatever, they took billions of dollars, Eric, billions and billions of dollars to buy back their stock. The Waltons did. The family did. They so that was cash they had. They had cash on hand, right, just sitting there,
right,
doing nothing. So rather than saying, hey, let's pay our workers a fair wage or, you know, a livable wage, we're going to take those billions of dollars and we're going to buy the outstanding stock so that we now own more percent of the company.
So we can be wealthier.
So we could be wealthier. And then each of the Waltons, there's like five or six of them. They're always in the Forbes top, you know, 100 income earners or wealthiest people in the country. But they're each worth like tens of billions of dollars, 40, 50 billion, you know, a piece, each one of them.
Right.
So that 40 to 50 billion, according to what Peter Schiff is saying, is that can be just sitting in a vault somewhere because they're saving, right? They're saving their money.
And that's good for the
economy. How is that good for the economy?
That's not even trickle down.
No, that's what I'm saying. You heard him say that. You heard him say that savings and productivity is what creates economic growth. That is simply not true, because if every one of the Walton family members kept their $50 billion inside a bank vault, that does nothing to grow the economy. Versus if we have, what, 300 million people here in the country, let's just say 200 million are eligible to work, and if you had 200 million people now making, say, $10,000 a year more, and those 200 million people spend that $10,000?
Or at least half of it.
Or half of it? Look, we'll give them credit. Save half of that. But then you got $5,000 being spent by 200 million people, right? 1,000 times 200 million would be what? 200 billion. So that would be 200 billion. That would be a trillion. That would be $1 trillion injected into the economy. Flowing through the economy if consumers spend more. But according to Peter Schiff, the libertarian financial guy, he's telling you that that's bad. That's not good for the economy. It's not good for work. What he's trying to tell you is it's better for the business owner to pocket as much money as possible and put it away into savings and not pay the workers, so that now you have millions of people who have the ability to spend less, and somehow that's going to drive growth, Eric.
Buzz.
No, it's not. And see, this is what conservative libertarian thinkers think. They think that the business owner, by making tons of profit, is going to take that money and automatically reinvest it into the economy. Like they're going to spend it in the economy. But my point is this, Eric, if you're a millionaire or for that matter, a billionaire, you've got all the disposable income you want. Why are you now motivated to say, you know what? I want to make more money now. And so I want to take the money that I have, my $1 billion, and throw it back into the economy because I want $2 billion or I want $3 billion. It's not how that works. Most people, when they get to that level of wealth, look, I'm not a billionaire, but being a physician, we're in the top 1% of income earners. But I can tell you, Eric, once I get to a certain level of financial security or whatnot, I'm not ravenous. I'm not like, I need more. I'm going to take all this cash that I have and I'm going to go out there and reinvest it. No, you know what it does? It sits there. It doesn't do anything. I mean, if I want to go on a vacation or something, I will. If not, I keel over, I die, I croak, and then guess what? It goes to my kids. That's probably when it gets back into the economy.
Right, they're going
to
go crazy.
Once my kids go crazy with the trust fund, you know, and they become of age. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I don't need to do that. And that is the fundamental flaw in libertarian and conservative financial thinking, is that the more rich you get, the wealthier you are, the more affluent you are, somehow or another, you will be the driver of the economy, Eric. You, right. The billionaire, you, the millionaire, you're the only ones who can make, you know, the economy drive. Not us plebes at the lower levels, well, not the low wage skilled unskilled workers. They do nothing for the economy, according to these elitist thinkers.
Well, that goes back to trickle down, doesn't it? I mean, they think that these people are going to trickle down the money to us, and that just doesn't never.
No,
never
and it is. It's trickle down economics. It's been proven not to work. Look, if you look at John Maynard Keynes and what he talked about as far as the driver of the economy, it is investment. It is actually putting money into the economy, and obviously through workers. Look what FDR did. Look what Franklin Delano Roosevelt did back in the Great Depression. Days, Eric. He basically created a public works project, is what he did, right? He got artists, he got people just to go out there and draw pictures on walls. Was that necessarily critical for the society at that time? No, but by employing people and giving them
it was critical.
Well, I'm saying you didn't need the murals to like society wouldn't have collapsed if we didn't have murals, being painted. But the point is that he understood fundamentally though that if you give somebody a job and they have income and that they're going to use that income and dispose of it back into the economy, there's what they call in economics. I didn't get a chance to talk to Peter about this, but he knows this. It's called the multiplier effect. For every dollar that you actually put into the economy, it multiplies itself because then the business owner gets that dollar, right? They make a profit. They might, with that profit, then reinvest it into the business or open another business and so on and so on. That's how basic economics works. You have money that's pipelined into the economy, and you create a multiplier effect. But that's what FDR did, Eric. He said, here's the public works project, so we're going to have people go out and fix up bridges or pave roads or build new railroad tracks or draw murals on a wall or anything. But it revived the economy because now you had millions of people being paid by the government, okay, to do a job. And what did they do with that money that they got? They didn't save it. They went out there and they spent it. Okay, they bought milk, they bought groceries for their children, they bought basic supplies and necessities and whatnot, and that rescued the economy. So I fundamentally disagree with the way that libertarians and for the most part Republicans and conservative Republicans even more so how they look at economics. It's a fundamentally flawed view. They always look at the supply demand curve in a vacuum, and that is simply not true. I mean, is it true that when supply goes up, demand goes, they're opposite, right?
Right, yes.
Right. So in any case, we'll get back to that. We got a lot of people on the line. We got Wayne from Illinois. We got Paul from Washington. We got Ken from Colorado. Another Ken from Oregon. Jeff from Illinois. Paul from California. Look, the phone lines are packed right now. So I promise when I get back, I will be getting directly to your calls because I know many of you want to talk about this minimum wage issue and, for that matter, the livable wage.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Dr. Mike Newcomb, broadcasting from 1480 KPHX here in Phoenix, Arizona. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. AFSCME workers at the University of California are on strike today with picketing at more than a dozen locations statewide on 9 campuses. AFSCME 3299's Todd Stenhouse says the strike stems from a coordinated campaign of illegal harassment and intimidation from UC administrators against frontline service and patient care workers who are advocating safe staffing standards.
We are organizing Californians from every walk of life, from students to patients to everyday taxpayers. So we're going to continue to organize. We're going to continue to fight. And we're going to continue to demand that they come back to the table and offer these folks the foundation of California's middle class, that they're going to offer them a fair contract.
At least 140 communities nationwide have enacted living wage ordinances to boost minimum wages. A new paper from the Center on Wisconsin Strategies studied those living wage initiatives. Jody Nouse wrote the paper. He says the living wage movement lifts up workers without any negative impacts on jobs or the economy.
By improving the quality of the jobs that these employers provide, they raise worker productivity, they reduce worker turnover. And the evidence is pretty clear that from the situations that we've seen to date, that living wage ordinances are one thing that will raise wages for low-wage workers. And they do this in a context that doesn't result or has not resulted in either tax increases for local residents or higher unemployment levels.
Now says middle-class jobs continue to be lost and replaced by low-wage jobs, especially in 4 industries.
We continue to lose middle-class jobs and gain low-wage jobs. And if you look in particular at the sectors of retail, food, home health care in particular, and temporary work, those four sectors are just huge growing parts of our economy, very low-wage work for the most part.
The Workers' Organizing Committee of Chicago on Tuesday protested McDonald's actions against a worker, Sonia Acuna, in what the workers say is an illegal use of the eligibility verification system. That system is used to verify documented work status for immigrants. Workers' Organizing Committee of Chicago spokesperson Jacqueline Serrato says that they're demanding that Sonia Acuna's hours be reinstated. And Serrato says as workers struggle for better wages at McDonald's, the company is giving some pretty ridiculous advice to its workers on how to cope with poverty wages.
Such as take 2 vacations a year, right? Which is ridiculous because most of our workers, they make between $11,000 and $18,000 a year. Some of the other suggestions are to sing away your stress or to break food into smaller pieces so you can get fuller faster.
We're still here!
Thanks to the tens of thousands of dollars raised in our emergency appeal, Workers Independent News is still here. A big thank you to all who contributed. We had to make a painful cut, though, in order to stay on the air, losing longtime WIN News co-producer Jesse Russell. Now we need your continued support to sustain Workers Independent News, so please go to laborradio.org and hit the donate button to be a WIN Solidarity Sustainer. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I'm Jim Javinski here for Tom Hartman on the news. You need to know this. Our nation has seen the dangers of coal mining and drilling for natural gas, but few of us have heard of coal gasification. That's because it's a highly dangerous process of creating synthetic natural gas by setting coal on fire and injecting it with oxygen and water. And if an Australian energy company has their way, Americans may become very familiar with this dangerous process. Link Energy is just one step away from starting the first coal gasification project in our nation in Campbell County, Wyoming. To make matters worse, they want to try this treacherous process while the coal is still deep underground, and the project would take place near a major regional aquifer. That's the way it is today, Tuesday, November 19th, 2013. I'm Jim Javinski, here for Tom Hartman on the news.
Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman program, the crash of 2016. You just heard Tom, and he will be, as I said, in Santa Monica, California tonight. That's tonight in Santa Monica, California from 7 to 9:30, 2.5 hours to get there and chat with Tom, get to his book. I'm sure he'll sign it, right, Eric? I assume Tom will sign all books.
It is a book signing.
It is a book signing, yes. So, indeed. And Tom's not going to charge you, actually, to get the signature, correct, Eric?
Yes, I'm pretty sure.
Out of
the goodness of his heart.
I know Peter Schiff would think that would be a good idea that, you know, for Tom as a businessman to charge people to make more profit.
And take that money and put it in his bank.
And put it in his bank. But Tom's going to be, you know, a trooper and say, guess what? We're just going to sign it. So at 7 to 9:30, and that will be at the Limonica Theater at 1332 Second Street in Santa Monica, California. So check it out. All right, let's get to the Freedom Lines, Eric, because a lot of people want to weigh in with their thoughts on this. And let's see here. Let's go to let me see. Well, there's so many people. I'm just going to go by who was calling the longest. Let's go to Paul. Let's go to Paul on the line from Lucerne, California. Paul, welcome to the program.
Hey,
oh, this is Ron. This is actually Ron from Denver. Okay, good, Ron. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, Ron, we can hear you.
I'm Paul from California. Let's hear in California.
Oh, okay. We got you, Paul. Go ahead.
All right. That guy lives in a bubble because he doesn't live in the real world, for one. And the average Walmart costs the taxpayers $1.1 million in subsidies, mostly food stamps and Medicare. Okay? That's why these people are able to keep these jobs long term, because the government's filling in the gap.
Right. Now, Paul, you bring up an excellent point, because look, we live here in Arizona, Eric and I, and there are quite a number of people who work at Walmarts here who are actually on the state Medicaid program, which is essentially the government, the state-run government program for health insurance for people who are essentially poor, you know, or don't make a livable wage. So you're right. I mean, Walmart can get away because these people can get the wage, the low wage from Walmart, but get the benefits from the taxpayer and from the government. And you're right. This is pretty much Walmart sucking off the teat, if you will, of the American taxpayer.
Yeah, and there's no training in a Walmart job. And that guy said you have to train workers and you can advance and make more money. That's a bunch of bull.
Yeah.
The system is so automated right now. You take a guy and show him in 3 days how to do his job, and he's making you money instantly in 3 days.
Right. Right. And do you agree with my point when I was saying that, you know, if Walmart, if the Waltons are worth $50 billion, they're just going to keep that money. They're not going to spend it and reinvest it in their workers and make the economy grow. I mean, it's...
They're not even going to pay taxes on that money. They're going to offshore that money and stuff like that. They're going to do everything they can to hide that money from our economy.
No, you're absolutely right. Well, listen, good comments, Paul. Thank you very much. All right, let's go to some of the other callers. And I'll tell you, if you guys go to Tom's actual Facebook page, people are going crazy on there. They're writing all about this guy, Peter Schiff. He really struck a chord with these.
What did he say? It was harder to get a job at Walmart than it was to go to Princeton or something?
Harvard.
I mean,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah, actually, I think he said it was Harvard. So anyway, all right, let's get back to some of the other callers. Let's go next to Jeff. Jeff is calling in from Chicago, Illinois, listening on WCPT. Jeff, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling from the perspective of I work for a major corporation, and I'm a store director or store manager.
Okay.
And I can tell you that because of competition over the years, doing this for 25 years, running a store that's probably, close to $2 million a week in sales. I'm just telling you that we compete with Walmart's one of our competitors, but a lot of people compete with Walmart. Just about everybody does. Mm-hmm. And Walmart's into almost every kind of sales there are. And, now they're really big into food. The thing is with Walmart, they've got the competition so tight, and they've got everybody trying to match their prices or get close to their prices just to stay in business, mm-hmm. that our payrolls are getting tighter and tighter every year. They're getting less. Our corporation is giving our stores less money to run on every year. And they're mainly doing it because we're trying to stay in business. And if there was a minimum wage hike, which we would have to pay our workers more money than we're paying now, sadly, what will happen is the corporation is just going to say, hey, you have the same payroll as you had last year, but you got to pay people more money. That just means you're going to end up cutting people, losing workers. Workers that were getting 28 hours are going to get 15 hours. You're going to get that same amount of money to spend to divide it, among your people.
I understand what you're saying, but what the previous guest or the previous caller was saying was the fact that they game the system at Walmart. So you can pay these people low wages. You can do it at a part-time level. You don't have to give them benefits. You don't have to give them health insurance. And as a consequence, then we, the taxpayers, have to pay for their health insurance, and then they get off scot-free, Walmart. And then, as the other caller said too, they take all those billions of dollars of profit offshore so it never gets taxed. So that's why your business is getting screwed, because maybe your business is playing by the rules and Walmart isn't. And that was the whole point, is that allow workers to unionize at Walmart, allow them to collectively bargain, allow them to get a fair wage, allow them to get good benefits, okay? And then let's see what happens. I mean, that'll change the whole complexion of things. But like I said, on Tom Hartman's Facebook page right now, there's a good discussion going on about what we just spoke with Peter Schiff about. And, you know, one of the comments I saw there, which I thought was very interesting, was Costco. I don't know which company you work for, but Costco is proven that, you know, the CEO said, we want to give our workers a livable wage. We want to give them good benefits. I think the average wage is like
the exact opposite of what Walmart's doing.
I think it's like $21, $22 an hour at Costco. And they've been able to keep workers because, you know what? Look, my dad was a big union guy, and he said the most valuable thing that any man or woman can ever give is his or her time and labor. And I believe that 100%. So you're going to have two different types of companies. You're going to have the company like Walmart that doesn't value the time and labor of their employees, and they're going to try to extricate from them whatever they can and exploit them. Then you have other companies like Costco who are going to say, you know what, I value my worker, and I'm going to give them a good livable wage and a good benefit package, because then you guess what you got? You got a loyal worker who's going to give great customer service.
And they don't have to work on Christmas at Costco either.
And you don't have to work on Christmas at Costco. But they're going to be great to the customers, and that's also going to grow your business too. So if you just look at a worker as a pawn, okay, that is the means to your own financial end, versus if you look at a worker as somebody of value who's a real human being with family and friends and children and has a life and a livelihood, then you have a different perspective on things. We'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, hour number two. Tom is not in today. He is actually in Santa Monica, California, and he's doing a book signing. So if you happen to be out there in Santa Monica from 7 to 9:30 tonight, Tom will be at Lemley Monica Theater, and that is 1332 2nd Street in Santa Monica, California, from 7 to 9:30. The book is The Crash of 2016, so take an opportunity to get to meet America's probably most prolific author, Eric.
Sure seems like it.
It seems like Tom writes a book every quarter. But in any case, The Crash of 2016, check it out. But listen, we do have a special guest also on the line right now. We're going to continue this debate, if you will, about the minimum wage, livable wage. We had Peter Schiff during the first hour, a libertarian financial advisor, and he had his own mindset about, you know, workers not having to make a livable wage or a minimum wage. But now we have Catherine Rutschlin on right now, and she is a policy analyst with DEMA. So, Catherine, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you and to hear the other perspective, because Peter Schiff really got our audience, the listening audience, in stitches, because they were just incredulous about what he was saying and how he feels as though that a, you know, a minimum wage would basically destroy the economy in America as we know it. So, Catherine, your perspective.
Well, you know, the minimum wage right now is $7.25 an hour, and it hasn't been raised in several years. At the same time, prices have been creeping up, making the real value of the wage constantly in decline. That means
right.
for every year that we don't improve the minimum wage standard, we're actually hurting our workforce. Now, this has repercussions for workers themselves, but it also has broader repercussions for the economy as a whole. And that's because workers at the bottom end of the income distribution are more likely to spend the entirety of their income than other workers in the economy. So giving them an extra dollar in their paycheck means that dollar's going to go right back into the economy as somebody else's income. In that way, it increases the circulation of money in the economy, and income overall increases. We found that if you raised wages at just the largest retailers in the country, we could generate $11 to $15 billion of new GDP and create over 100,000 new jobs.
Excellent. And Catherine, I tried to make that point. You said it a lot better than I did, I think. But I was trying to make the point to Peter Schiff that that's exactly what happens. He was trying to say that the only way an economy can grow is through savings and through productivity. And that made no sense to me, because if you look at savings, like you just said, if everybody just saved every dollar that they made and didn't dispose of it or didn't use it, you know, to throw it back into the economy, how could the economy or the GDP or anything grow?
Sure. And on the productivity side, you know, the idea that productivity is a benefit to the economy assumes that that productivity translates into larger incomes, right?
Right.
If the minimum wage had kept up with productivity growth, since its historic highs, say back in the 1960s, the minimum wage today would be something between $16 and $22, depending on how you measure productivity. Now, that's a huge jump, and the reason for that is because over those past 40 years or so, all those productivity gains went into the hands of those at the top of the income distribution. So even though workers were working harder, producing more goods, generating more value for the economy, they weren't seeing a benefit for that value. So the link between productivity and the wage was broken, meaning that that increased economic benefit that Peter Schiff is depending on for his argument didn't actually happen, because these workers still had a depressed level of consumer spending. And that's exactly the situation we find ourselves in now. We see slow growth in the economy and some of our biggest companies, Walmart, for example, lamenting the poor consumer environment when they don't realize that they're actually perpetuating it with their low-wage model.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Tell us a little bit, Catherine, about Walmart and the stock buyback. They spent about $7.6 billion last year to buy back shares of their very own stock. Tell the listening audience, what does that mean for Walmart? What does it mean for workers? And what does that mean for the economy?
Right. Well, over the last year, we've seen Walmart workers becoming increasingly vocal about the conditions at their store, walking out on the basis of just a lack of respect in the workplace, but also because even though they struggle hard for their employer and their employer is doing just fine, these workers at the end of the day can't make ends meet on their meager paychecks. So we decided to see if it was possible for these workers to get the kind of raise that they're asking for. Our Walmart workers, hundreds of workers at thousands of stores across the country have been asking for a raise to $25,000 a year for full-time year-round work. Now, $25,000 a year doesn't sound like a lot. And if you look at somebody's budget on $25,000 a year, they're still making critical choices between meeting their basic needs, trading off things like food and health care, because they can't afford to cover the expenses of themselves and their family.
Right. And that's just so people understand, I'm doing a back-of-the-envelope calculation here, Catherine, but it's roughly about $12.50 an hour then, right?
Yep, a little less than that, about $12.25.
Okay.
We decided to investigate whether it would be possible for Walmart to do that. And what we found is that Walmart makes this critical choice on what to do with their profits. Now, last year, Walmart raked in about $17 billion in profits a year. And they get to decide what they're going to do with their profits. They gave part of that back to shareholders in dividend payments, and they used some of it to invest in capital. Well, they used $7.6 billion of it to go into the stock market and buy back shares of their own stock. What that does is it means there's fewer people who own Walmart stock. And in fact, this was a huge benefit for the Walmart family themselves, those heirs to the Walton fortune who are raking in not just dividend payments, but the benefit of the growth of the firm in terms of earnings.
Right.
And now they've consolidated through these share buybacks to own more than a 50% stake in the firm. So they
just the Walton family.
Just the Walton family.
Wow.
And when you go out and buy back these shares, that means that the same level of earnings for your company is being distributed over fewer public shares, making the earnings per share ratio go up. So it looks, in terms of your earnings per share, like your company is doing better, even though you haven't made any investment in your firm or in the economy. You haven't actually improved the future projections for your sales.
Right.
The individual stockholder who may be able to turn around and sell that share is doing better.
Right.
If
right.
Walmart used that $7.6 billion to invest in its workforce instead of to generate this kind of artificial bump in their earnings to share ratio, they could meet the needs of every low-income employee that they have. That's 825,000 workers in the United States who are earning less than $25,000 a year could see a raise to that kind of basic threshold.
Right. Now, what would Walmart's argue? I'm just playing devil's advocate here. So say they did that and the worker now makes $5.83 an hour more, which I'm all in favor of. But Walmart will say, well, I took that $7.6 billion. I just kind of squandered it. I threw it away to the workers, and it doesn't help me, the company, or me, the CEO, to have the company thrive and succeed. What would be the argument against that?
Well, you know, if Walmart said that, they'd be really ignoring the preponderance of evidence about what a raise does for a retail workforce, because there's been a lot of expertise showing that when you invest in your workers return that investment to you through higher productivity and lower turnover. Right now, Walmart loses about 500,000 workers per year to their high turnover rate because the workers can't make ends meet on their paycheck, so they go looking for something else, or they're not treated well on the job. But if they valued their employees would stick around. That would reduce their costs in terms of seeking out new labor and training that labor to do a better job. And there's more benefits, too. Not only would the workers with more money in their pockets come back to Walmart and be able to spend more, and that's that GDP income bump I was talking about before, but you would see better customer satisfaction for customers even that don't work at the store. And that's because if you talk to a Walmart worker today, they'll tell you that they're being expected to do the jobs of three workers. So stores are disorganized, customers can't find what they need on the shelf. A raise for
right.
workers, an investment in their workforce.
All right, hold on, Catherine. I got to run to a break. Hold on. I'll have you back in the next segment.
Great.
Just stay with us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dr. Mike Newcomb, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Shame on you, Walmart. Shame on you. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Tom will be actually at a book signing tonight at the Limley Monica Theater, 1332 2nd Street, Santa Monica, California, and that'll be from 7 to 9:30 p.m. The book is The Crash of 2016, The Plot to Destroy America. And I think chapter one is called Peter Schiff, if I'm not mistaken, Eric. But in any case, let's get back to our guest right now because we're getting the contrarian view here on with respect to livable wages, minimum wages. We have Catherine Rutschlin on, and she is the policy analyst with Demos. So, Catherine, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, it's a great conversation. Well, let me ask you this, Catherine. So what's happening on this front? So clearly you've presented a very compelling case that, look, if you indeed do pay your workers more money, they obviously have more disposable income. They inject that into the economy. It has a multiplier effect, and it ultimately helps other businesses grow and helps the macro economy overall grow as well. So to me, that makes complete sense. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about Peter's, I guess, position that supply demand, that, you know, if you start paying workers more wages, that, you know, the demand for workers is somehow going to dry up.
Sure. I can tell you a little bit about this. You know, in order to maintain a workforce, it costs money. And so when you pay your workers, you have to pay them a basic minimum, just enough to keep them healthy and productive, able to make their shifts at work, not be too worried about where their kids are being taken care of or whether they can put food on the table at home. Now, that's a basic cost that all firms are going to incur, and that's the cost of supply of labor, right? Mm-hmm. Now, right now, firms like Walmart, McDonald's, Target, KFC, they're depending on taxpayers to pay that cost because they don't pay wages high enough for their workers to meet their basic needs, and so those workers have to turn to food stamps and public health subsidies in order to get by. So
And what about health care, too? I mean, because you're just talking about food. What about health care? Because I would assume that Walmart doesn't offer robust
yeah.
health benefits, do they?
That's right. They have a health care plan available to full-time workers, but most of the workers I've talked to say that it's too expensive for them to afford on their wages, and so there's a very low uptake rate there. And in fact, new data from a couple of states came out this year that showed us the public health costs of firms. And this was in Massachusetts and Missouri. They showed that we're talking about $15 million a year in a public health care safety net just to go to Walmart.
Wow.
$6 million in Missouri. This is a big public expense. So when the argument that, you know, that we're paying the wage that is socially necessary according to supply and demand is made, they're actually ignoring the fact that it's actually the public that's picking up the tab. And that's just yet another reason why people should have a real stake in what kind of wages are paid at these firms that make up the backbone of our economy.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Tell us a little bit about the Seattle worker. I know that you had released this infographic about a Seattle worker and her particular struggle to make ends meet. She worked at Walmart for 11 years. Tell us a little bit about that.
That's right. Patricia is one of the many Walmart workers that I've had a chance to talk to over the course of investigating this problem. And she's a really good example because she's worked at Walmart for 11 years. She's loyal to her job. She's good at her job. She covers several departments at once, working in sporting goods at the same time as she's mixing paint and cutting keys and checking out people at the register. She's a good worker, and she's a dependable worker at the firm. But a year ago, she decided to go on strike, and she decided to go on strike because although she makes around the income level that the strikers are asking for, she still can't make ends meet. And she and I talked a lot about her budget, and, you know, she makes $13 an hour, and that is more than most of the strikers are asking for. But so that's what makes her a really good example of what it means to live at that level of income. And what she finds is that after she pays her basic bills, she's still making critical trade-off choices. Importantly, she was one of the workers who couldn't afford the health care plan at Walmart, and she wound up in the hospital with pneumonia last year and walked out with a $21,000 medical bill.
Wow.
In addition to the $21,000 medical bill, of course, missing a week of work means that she missed a quarter of her income for that month. So she was even farther behind, and that kind of debt can be crippling to someone who lives just on the margin of being able to take care of their families.
Right, and probably now is looking at potentially bankruptcy, you know, with a $21,000 hospital bill.
That's right. In order to pay off her debt, if they garnished her check, it would be almost the entirety of her check. And she has a 14-year-old daughter who, you know, is in eighth grade and, you know, trying to plan for her future, and it's becoming increasingly uncertain, and bankruptcy looks like the only way they'll be able to cope.
Yeah, I saw in that infographic that after paying for herself and her 14-year-old daughter, she's left with only $432 afterwards to buy groceries and medical expenses and other household needs, so that's very sad. Well, listen, Catherine, we appreciate you so much for coming on the show today, and if people want to check you out on the web, what can they do?
Demos.org, D-E-M-O-S. It means the people.
Okay, excellent, excellent. Listen, Catherine, thank you so much for coming on the program today, and we look forward to having you back in the future.
Thank you so much. It's been a great time.
Okay. All right. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Catherine Ruchkin, if you want to, Ruchlin, if you want to check her out on the, and the organization, it's demos.org. Is that correct, Eric? D-E-M-O-S.
Yeah. And you the can, people.
The people, right? Just like democracy and democratic. And what we'd like to do also is get back to the callers. So let me give you the number for the Freedom Line right now, because we are definitely going to get to all the callers on the rebound here, because a lot of people want to talk about this. It's 1-866-987-THOM. Again, that's 1-866-987-8466 is the number.
$432 isn't even enough to go to work a month on gas.
I know. Isn't that
sad? Depending on where you work, you know?
I mean, here's a mother making $13.10 an hour, and only has $400+.
I think that's what my, you know, family spends in gas every month, just going back and forth to work.
Yeah, yeah. I just don't get it. I just don't get it. And why would you would think that the Walton family
would want these people to be happy?
Happy, right? Being the if you're a billionaire, I mean, you would think at least you'd want your workers.
I don't want them as wealthy as I am, Mike.
Right? Absolutely. I'll tell you, selfish, selfish, selfish. All right, listen. We'll be back. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Broadcasting from 1480 KPHX here in Phoenix, Arizona, this is Dr. Mike Newcomb, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in today, and special thanks to Catherine Ruchlin for her keen insight into how an economy really does work. Versus Peter Schiff, one of the Tom's fans on Facebook said that Peter Schiff is full of Schiff.
Clever.
Yes, very, very clever. So, in any case, Tom will be tonight at the Lemley Monica Theater, 1332 2nd Street in Santa Monica, California, and he will be doing some book signing for his book, The Crash of 2016. So check that out tonight, Wednesday, November 20th, from 7 to 9:30 p.m. Okay, well, let's get to the Freedom Lines, Eric. A lot of people want to have their say, and they've been holding very patiently, so let's go from the top down, you know, as
let's come first, sir.
We'll do trickle on down.
Yeah, we'll trickle,
trickle on down for the call. Oh, he's there. All right, I thought Wayne had left us. How you doing there, Wayne?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Every day's a blessing.
Yes, I think what Peter Schiff was saying, I know what he was saying was pure crap. He's saying that economic activity increases because of savings and productivity. Or he says that 600 jobs were offered by Walmart. 30,000 people showed up. He has a very narrow, limited, rigid view of economics. He doesn't take into account any other extenuating circumstances, such as the reason why 30,000 people are applying for 600 jobs is because the Republicans have blocked every single jobs bill since Obama became president.
Right.
You know, that's the reason right there.
Sure. He tried to make it out like, though, that Wayne, that because that many people were looking for those so few jobs that they were highly desirable jobs. They weren't. The people were going to apply for that job because they're desperate, because the economy is not doing great, because the Republicans are killing all the jobs bills. So they're just desperate people. That's all it was.
And let me say this. The guy, his name is Peter Schiff. It's guys like him who are on the business roundtable. He calls himself a libertarian. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be a libertarian to think like him. That business roundtable, the 100 biggest corporations who always talk to the president, those are the guys who are talking to the president. Those 600 corporations who are writing their own laws for the TPP agreement, those are the people who are talking to the president, people like Peter Schiff. So that is going to have to change because it's pure crap what he said. It's limited economic theory, not taking into account extenuating circumstances, meaning the real world.
I agree, Wayne. Listen, well said, well said. I'm going to get some other calls. Thank you for calling in from Chicago. Appreciate it. Okay, that's Wayne from WCPT, and I'm beginning to think that Peter Schiff, his view on economics to me, Eric, is a little shifty.
Again, clever.
Again, clever. All right, 866-987-THOM. Again, 866-987-8466. If you want to hop along the Freedom Express, give us a shout, okay? Well, let's go to Howard. Howard's listening in Hollywood, Florida, and Howard, I believe, actually has a little bit of agreement with Peter Schiff.
Uh-oh.
Not actually agreement, but I understand. I don't know if I can say I understand or don't understand. He's trying to basically say, where does this money come from for the raise that these people are going to get in order to get into your scenario, which is basically Keynesian economics,
right,
which I agree with totally. Mm-hmm. But first, I must say that Peter Schiff is the first libertarian that I've ever heard of who sanctions government-financed workers,
right,
subsidized workers, which
right,
is not libertarian. But anyway, the gap is here. If you're going to give your workers a dollar increase, it doesn't mean you raise the price of everything in your store by a dollar. It means you raise the price by 1 or 2% in order to give that increase, and that's what's been missing by both of your guests. Your prices a couple of percent to make this difference up. And
right,
that's not going to affect their competitive position at all.
So right.
That's
well,
one of the scenarios. The other is, the other place where the money comes from, is if you raise taxes on profits, the corporation will not take the profit out of the business because they'll only get part of it. They leave the profit in the business, and that provides for additional money for wages, for expanding the business, for opening up new divisions, whatever. That's the other place the money comes from. And somehow he just didn't seem to want to say where this money was going to come from for the increases.
No, and then the other thing that Catherine pointed out, too, and I agree, is that, look, you have the Waltons who, you know, are the heirs, the great sort of fortune of Walmart. And here you have them basically taking $7.6 billion of profits or cash on hand just to simply buy back the stock so that they have more ownership in the company. And that to me is an incredibly selfish act, Howard, in the sense that, look, you're already a gazillionaire. You're a billionaire multiple times over. You know, why not value your workers? Why not take, you know, half of that, you know, and reinvest that into your workers' skill set training, hire a living wage, give them cheaper health care benefits? I mean, what happened to the days when employers actually valued their employees, that they looked at them as almost like family, you know, like you're like my family and I'm going to treat you well? Instead, it's just it seems that there's a dichotomy now, and that employers, particularly employers like Walmart, really don't have that kind of relationship with their workers.
And what you described is exactly what the founding fathers expected out of employers, to value their workers because their workers were contributing to the business.
Yeah, and that's just not happening nowadays. All right, listen, Howard, well said. I appreciate your commentary. Thank you. All right, let's go forward here. Let's keep moving on. Let's see who do we got next here. Let's go to Maureen. Maureen is listening on Free Speech TV, wants to comment on a Kmart commercial. Maureen, welcome.
Yes, Dr. Mike, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I do want to let you know that I have not stepped foot into Walmart since I've been watching Free Speech TV. I'll spend the extra dollar, whatever I have to do. But the point I have to make today is I live in Warren, Michigan. My son died of Huntington's disease a year and a half ago.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Okay. And before he was in the nursing home, and even when he was in the nursing home, I always went to Kmart and got him because he loved Joe Boxer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, I don't know if you've seen the commercial out. They have Kmart. But it's got six men with suit coats on and ties, and they're wearing Boxer underwear.
Okay? Oh, okay.
And they are jingling. They got jingle bells by their junk.
Right.
Okay. And they are playing the song with their junk to jingle bells.
Oh, wow. That's a little crazy.
Okay. And it just, I'm a baby boomer. You know, I have one son left who does, thank God, does not have Huntington's. It is a terrible disease. But to sit here and know that all the money I spent at Kmart on Joe Boxer, and if I walked into Kmart today with jingle bells inside my bra,
right,
they'd take me to the loony bin.
No, they would probably usher you out of there. So, all right, well, listen, we appreciate you, Maureen, calling in, giving us your perspective on things. And, again, we're very sorry to hear about your son who passed away from the Huntington's chorea. So thank you so much for calling in, okay? Okay, there you have it. That's Maureen calling in. 1-866-987-THOM is the number, 1-866-987-8466. That is the number for the Freedom Lines. Okay, let's go to Steve. Steve's listening on Sirius XM Satellite, and that is in Haymarket, Virginia. So, Steve, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, I was in business for 20 years, and I grossed $3.5 million a year. It usually only cost me about $3 million to do it. And I didn't pay anybody minimum wage. I had to pay them like two times or three times the minimum wage, because there was such a shortage of laborers in the D.C. area. Mm-hmm. And I think what the main way to avoid this is to have some sort of a negative income tax, or, hey, let's just go ahead and put about 110% employment throughout the United States. There's two projects that would do that and solve global warming as well.
Right.
But the point is, we're wasting time doing these minimum wage things. At the same time, we got people printing $87 billion a month. They're devaluing money to help keep the rich rich, and they're ignoring the fact that they're taking this money away from the poor. And I don't understand how this checkers mentality is persisting in our society. You know, with all of the solutions that we have out here, we don't have problems. We just have too many solutions. Let's solve these problems, get everybody to work. And like the people who work for me, I furnished the family health care. I furnished engines and transmissions for their pickup trucks. I had my own truck.
All right, Steve, we appreciate all your comments, sir. We got to run right now because we're up against the break, so I definitely appreciate what you had to say. Listen, we still got a lot of people on the line. Paula, we got Tom from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Art from Chicago. We got Pierre from Hartsville, Colorado. Corky from Rochester, New York. Elky from North Carolina. Ken from Oregon. Kathy from Washington.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Don't forget, Tom is out there tonight, ladies and gentlemen. He's doing a book signing, so if you're in Santa Monica, California, go to the Lemley Monica Theater, and that is at 1332 2nd Street in Santa Monica from 7 to 9:30 p.m. tonight. Tom will be doing the book signing for his newly released book, The Crash of 2016, The Plot to Destroy America. Okay, let's go to Ellen. Ellen Ratner is on the line right now from Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, welcome.
Well, thank you so much. Debbie Stabenow said that she wants to extend unemployment insurance as part of a conversation that's being held by Democratic and actually Republican conferees on the budget. And so that's kind of interesting. Also, today the president gave a Medal of Freedom to 16 people today. Three were not alive. Then he attended a wreath laying ceremony at President Kennedy's graves. The Clintons were in the limo with the president, and members of the Kennedy family attended. It's the 50th anniversary, actually, of President Kennedy's giving the Medal of Freedom. Healthcare got Gov. Secretary of State of Health and Human Services, Sebelius, she was in Florida today, and the healthcare.gov government site would not work with her. It would not work for her. She was showing people how to sign up for it.
Well, that's not good, Alan.
Also, there is the slowest growth in healthcare spending in the last 3 years, 1.3% rise approximately for each year. White House says it's because of the Affordable Care Act and sort of outcome-based, but also there was a large reduction of Medicare payments to physicians and hospitals. That is not so good. Now, the Representative Riddell from Florida, he received a sentence of only 1 year. He tried to buy 3.5 grams of cocaine from an undercover officer in DuPont area restaurant. Honestly, that is not a pretty situation because a lot of people go to prison for a lot longer for that.
Sure. No doubt. Hey, who were some of the people who got the Freedom Medals?
The Freedom Medal. Well, Bill Clinton was one of them. Loretta Lynn, the singer, got the Medal of Freedom.
Okay.
We got Oprah Winfrey got a Medal of Freedom today, I believe. Yes. Ben Bradley, famous
Washington Post.
Washington Post. Bill Clinton, Senator Inouye, who has since passed, Senator Richard Lugar, who, as you know, got beaten by a Tea Party person. Sally Ride, who died, first woman astronaut, female astronaut to travel to space. Let's see, who else? Arturo Sandoval, he's a jazz musician. Dean Smith, head coach in, I believe, North Carolina. Don't ask me about sports. Gloria Steinem was one of them. Corey Vivian, C.T. Vivian, known as a freedom rider. Patricia Wald, a judge. And, of course, Oprah Winfrey.
Interesting. Well, what else have we got going on, Ellen?
Okay, so more going on. Well, Senator, did I say Senator Kerry? I meant Secretary Kerry and President Karzai have agreed on terms to keep troops in Afghanistan. They're going to have advisors. Those of us from the Vietnam era know what that means. Not good. Barbara Lee, a Democrat from California, along with Walter Jones from North Carolina, Jim McGovern, a Democrat from Massachusetts, Walter Jones is a Republican. They sent a letter to the president calling for a full withdrawal of U.S. troops and says that Congress has a role in approving, should have a role in approving any further presence. And, of course, this idea is to continue a military presence until 2024.
Wow. It's going to cost a lot of money for that.
We've already spent $778 billion.
Wow, approaching $1 trillion. That's absolutely insane. What else we got going on?
Okay, Senator Bernie Sanders, independent from Vermont, Brunch with Bernie on Tom Hartman Show. He held a subcommittee on aging to discuss the disparities in life expectancy between regions of the United States. He said that poverty in America is, in fact, very expensive. He said if people don't have access to health care, if they don't have access to education, if they don't have access to jobs and affordable housing, then we wind up paying not only in terms of human suffering, but also shortening life expectancy.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
And he said that Americans have shorter life expectancies than people in 16 other high-income studies.
How can that be, Ellen, if we have the best healthcare system in the world?
That's a very good question. I don't even want to think about it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, what else do we have? Anything else going on out there?
Well, yes. The other issue that might come up and is coming up is the possibility of doing this nuclear option for judges.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, means getting rid of some of the rules that allow for legislation to go through and the 60 votes necessary.
How many judges are being held up right now? I know that's quite a bit. Do we have any recent estimates or numbers?
We know that three nominees are absolutely, yes.
Wow. Wow. All right. Oh, anything else, Ellen? Is that pretty
much? Okay, so The Center for Democracy and Technology issued a report today, and they said the lack of transparency by governments make it extremely difficult to have an accurate understanding of what data they're doing. They say that technological advances make it easier for governments to collect, store, and process information on a massive scale, that internet-based services have become very globalized, therefore allowing trans-border surveillance to flourish, that national security powers have been getting stronger, and that governments' national security powers have been conducted in extreme secrecy.
And one last thing, Ellen, because we're coming up against the break here. What did Secretary Sebelius have to say about that website not working
as
part of the demo?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, she basically didn't say much.
I just went to it, and it's down.
It's down now again?
Oh, I can't even talk about it.
Oy vey, as we used to say back in NYU.
Right.
All right, Ellen. Appreciate it. Thank you so much. All right, there you have it. Ellen Ratner from Talk Radio News Service. When we get back, Eric, we're going to be bareback. We have no further guests for hour number three, so we're going to get to Paula, Tom, David, Art, Pierre, Corky, Ellie, Ken, Kathy, everybody. Just hold tight right there because it's going to be you and me and the public airways when we get back. Stay with us.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back to Hour 3 of the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in today. Tom is out there in the community. Signing books, Eric.
Yes.
The Crash of 2016.
What is that, like his 100th book?
Tom, I'm telling you, he's a we have a Tom
library,
Hartman
yeah.
library here.
Every time I walk in that room, there's like two more books.
Two more. He's very, very prolific. God bless him. All right, but listen, he will be tonight at Santa Monica, California. He'll be at the Lemley Monica Theater, and that address is 1332 2nd Street in Santa Monica from 7 to 9:30 tonight. So definitely, if you happen to be in the area, check it out, buy a book, get it signed, and meet Tom Hartman. Tomorrow, November 21st, Eric, he will be in San Francisco, and he will be at the Commonwealth Club, which is located on 595 Market Street, and that'll be from noon to 2. And then Friday, he'll be at the Powell's Bookstore in Burnside's, actually in Portland, Oregon. It's at 1005 West Burnside Street, Portland, Oregon. And then next Tuesday, December 3rd, well, that's not next Tuesday, that's several Tuesdays from now, but December 3rd, he'll be in Washington, D.C. at Politics and Prose, and that's on 5015 Connecticut Avenue, Northwest Washington, D.C. So Tom's got a very busy schedule here. Definitely check it out. You can get the book online or any of the fine bookstores throughout the country. It's The Crash of 2016. Okay, let's get back to the Freedom Lines right now at 866-987-THOM. That's 866-987-8466. We got a full board of callers. So let's just go to Pierre first. And Pierre is listening in Hartsell, Colorado. So, Pierre, welcome to the program.
Hi. This is the first time trickle down has actually worked for me. I'm thrilled.
There you have it.
Okay. Anyway, I just wanted to make a couple of comments about the guest you had. Your second guest, she was great.
Yes.
One of the things that cracked me up, he talked about how consumer spending doesn't relate to job growth. And all I could think about, aren't we coming up on the Christmas season? If that doesn't make any difference, then why did they hire extra people at Christmas? And why, when the government shutdown happens, all the guys that had the little tarps on the streets and various operators with different things around the city, they all felt the crunch. So, you know, it's such a bogus argument. Even if you don't know anything about economics, you can see that he's got to be wrong on that one.
No, absolutely, Pierre. That's an excellent point. That's like, so why do we have a Black Friday, like after Thanksgiving, right? So people don't go into stores and don't spend any money?
That's right. And when he talked about the service industry and how, and since I was the first half of my life I spent in the service industry, I know for a fact that, I made 90 cents an hour when Reagan became president. The first things that they pushed was taxing tips. I was flabbergasted because, for some days that you'd make $35.
Right.
Now you're going to get taxed on that $35 with your 90 cents an hour pay. And it's so bogus. And to be honest, like men like him, and not just men, there were women too, sometimes you...
Ayn Rand is one of the most foremost.
Right. And it wasn't because you gave them bad service, because they thought you were making minimum wage. So why should they tip you? They had no clue that you were making 90 cents an hour. So, these things, it is ridiculous. And one last little thing. How many billions do each of the Walmart heirs need?
Right, the Waltons.
How many billions do they need that they can't provide a decent wage for the rest of the people?
I agree, Pierre. Well, listen, well said. I appreciate your call. Thank you for holding. Okay, that's Pierre calling in from Hartsell, Colorado. I mean, do you think they're related to the Waltons from the TV show?
Good night, John Boy. You're not getting any Christmas bonus this year,
Chicken.
John Boy.
Can imagine? Yeah, imagine that show, the Waltons, but it's the Waltons from the Walmarts. Ay, ay, ay. All right, let's get back to the Freedom Lines. Next up, let's go to Eli and Raleigh, North Carolina. Wants to comment on the minimum wage. Very popular topic today. Welcome, Eli.
Hey, hello. How are you doing? My name is Eli. Hi, Sean, Ellie. But besides, said about the restaurant industry, because I used to be in as well myself, how much greedier there are in North Carolina. One way is that those who make you.
All right, Eli, I'm gonna have to let you go because I can't hear you, buddy. Try calling back on a landline or something because you're coming in and out. All right, 866-987-THOM. That's 866-987-8466. Let's go next to Corky. Corky's listening on Free Speech TV in Rochester, New York, and wants to comment on the topic at hand. Corky, welcome. Hello, Corky. All right, Corky, going once, going twice. and gone.
Strike two.
Strike three, actually. All right, let's keep moving forward. Let's go next to Art. Art's in Chicago, Illinois, and he wants to have a say. How are you, Art?
Thank you for taking my call, Art. I appreciate it. I've been in the business since I was 14 years old, which is back 1950.
Uh-huh.
And I've been in the food business all my life. And I started out independent and worked for a chain store. And the chain store I went to was profit sharing. But mm-hmm. why are you picking on Walmart? I don't understand that. I shop at Walmart. They're mm-hmm. friendly people. They hand me a buggy when I walk in. They mm-hmm. say thank you after I leave. I don't understand it. If the people are happy, then why don't we make the minimum? Why can't the minimum wage be $20?
Yeah, but no one's picking on the workers of Walmart. I mean,
picking on the workers of Walmart. Why are we picking on the bosses of Walmart? They're rich people. What's wrong with the rich people?
There's nothing wrong with being rich. No one's got any problem with rich people. The problem is that when rich people don't value their workers and don't respect their workers and don't treat their workers, what's that?
Slavery. It's supply and demand. For each job Walmart, there's about 15 people looking for that job. And you know why? Because we killed the steel industry. There were steel mills around Chicago you wouldn't believe. Workers now everybody's leaving Illinois. There's no job. Steel mills been gone for about 30 years.
Right.
Why? Because the green. What green? It's a bunch of baloney.
Well, but Art, wouldn't you agree that the economy has changed? I mean, it's not in a manufacturing economy anymore. We have the internet.
Why
we
not?
Have
why
all
not?
Kinds
why
of.
Why isn't there manufacturing anymore? Why not? You know what? Because we drill for oil. Well, we drill for oil, but we don't process the oil. We cut all them processing oil refineries down. That's why, and that's why.
Well, you could also make the argument, Art, that we don't.
$4 a gallon.
You can also make the argument that
oil is because we don't process it.
Yeah, but going back to what you were saying with steel, I mean, it's almost like the Walmart philosophy all over again. The reason we don't have manufacturing here is because other countries, China and India or whoever, can now create steel at slave wages. No, of course. All right, it's true.
I worked in Gary, Indiana. Mm-hmm. I worked there. I worked in Chicago. I worked in all these food stores. I worked with people that worked. I fed them.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what I'm talking about. I worked in Chicago, some of the places that you wouldn't believe.
So why do you think we don't make steel anymore?
Why don't we make steel anymore? Because
yeah.
our prices were too darn high. Them steel workers were getting $30 an hour sitting around doing nothing.
So it was the workers' fault. We were paying them too much money. It has nothing.
That's
to
right.
So now
that's
the other
right.
countries like China and India, they can have great big steel factories because they can pay the workers, you know, $2.50 an hour.
There was a pollution, too, Art. Remember the pollution. Don't forget the pollution. But now, I'm not going to give out pollution. Now, but I'm going to tell you one thing. Read about volcanoes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you a real quick thing about the volcanoes. Mount St. Helens, when she blew, every second, 200,000 pounds of carbon was let into the air.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
Read volcanoes and tell me the Earth takes care of itself. Now, man cannot produce...
Are you going off into a global warming tangent now?
No, I didn't. I'm just telling you.
No, he's saying the carbon emissions from steel manufacturing was nowhere near as bad as
I got you. All right, well, listen, I appreciate the call. All right, we got to go up against the break right now, but interesting conversation nonetheless. Okay, 866-987-THOM. Again, 866-987-8466. George Zimmerman, Eric, back in the news. Arrested the other day. Put a gun, apparently, to his girlfriend's head.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back. If you want to get to meet Tom in person, if you want him to sign a book, you can do that tonight in Santa Monica, California, from 7 to 9:30. Check it out. Tom will be at Lemley Monica Theater. It's located on 1332 2nd Street in Santa Monica from 7 to 9:30 tonight. And Tom will be signing copies of his book, The Crash of 2016, The Plot to Destroy America and What We Can Do About It. So let's get back to these freedom lines right now. And first up in the queue, let's go to Melanie. Eric, what do you say?
Sounds like a plan.
Let's go to Melanie. She's in Denver, Colorado, and she actually agrees with Peter Schiff.
Well, we're going to get one or two of those, don't you think? They'll get in the phone line
I think
somehow?
So. Let's see why Melanie agrees with Peter. Melanie, welcome.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine. I was going to try and see if I could explain a little more what I think he was trying to say.
Please do, because we've had a hard time trying to understand him. So maybe you could do better than Peter.
Okay. I think what he was saying is, if you increase spending for one person and that causes another person to decrease spending, your economy is not really growing. If you're just looking at one side of it, which you kept saying, but if you give these people on minimum wage more money, they're going to spend more. That's going to help the economy. That's only true if the minimum wage increase doesn't cause others to not get a job, which means they aren't spending any money, and doesn't cause people going to that store to buy less goods and therefore spend less money. Because when that happens, you just come out with a wash and you're not really increasing the economy.
Right.
But I think that was what he was trying to say.
I think so, but it's flawed logic because it goes back to what I was telling you earlier. Let's just say hypothetically everything exists as it does right now, okay? Well, that's not hypothetical. It is. So if you look at Walmart, okay, they bought back their stock, okay? The heirs to the throne, the Waltons, they basically said, we got $7.6 billion of cash just sitting around right now. It has nothing to do with hiring workers. It has nothing to do with anything. They took that money and basically bought back their stock so that they have more ownership in the company, okay? It did nothing to increase revenues. It did nothing for job growth. It did nothing for the employees. My point is this. If they had all that cash sitting around, why would they not use some of that cash to give to their employees who basically would get a higher wage than rather than the cash just sitting around or them buying it for stock? That money would have gone into their employees' pockets. The employees then would have gone out and bought milk and cars and groceries and goods and school supplies, and then that would have had a multiplier effect in the economy. But by taking $7.6 billion of cash sitting around and then just buying more stocks so that you have more ownership, how does that help the economy, Melanie?
Well, I think the issue is that it's...
Answer my question. How does that help the economy? I'm saying to you that your theory, and you agree with Peter Schiff, and I'm telling you, no, I don't agree with that. I don't agree that if you pay workers more money, then you're going to have to lay people off because you can't hire as many workers. I just told you they had $7.6 billion extra cash sitting around, which they decided to put in their own pockets rather than paying their workers more money and helping to stimulate the economy and help the economy grow. You had greed on one hand, on behalf of the Waltons and Walmart, and that's why these workers didn't, and they didn't get any higher wages.
But you consider that greed. They might have considered that to be a better business decision because somebody else maybe would get a higher stock price and a higher dividend, would turn around and invest in other companies to do other jobs or in an entrepreneur that would start other jobs. And that would increase the economy.
Well, and that's where you have a difference. That's where you have Walmart, and they have their philosophy, and then you have people like Costco and their CEO who has their philosophy. Costco says,
that's
you know what,
right.
I'm going to actually pay my workers $21, $22 an hour. I'm going to give them good benefits. I'm going to treat them well. I'm going to treat them with respect. I'm going to value my workers.
Make them happy.
Because they know if they're happy to be there, then guess what? There's going to be happier customers because they treat customers better.
And at Costco, you don't have people up in arms, employees up in arms.
Yeah.
Apparently, that works very well for Costco. It may not work to what the Waltons think for Walmart. And if they're wrong, they'll go out of business like Kmart.
Well, they won't go out of business because what's happening is that Walmart knows that there's always going to be desperate people in society. They always know that there's going to be an element of society that'll work for crap, basically. I mean, they know that. And that's what they're doing. They're exploiting human beings, they're exploiting people's time and their labor because they know they can get away with. Not only can they pay them crap wages, Melanie, but they can also offload a lot of the expense of those workers to us, to you, to me, to the taxpayers, because these people work part-time, they get low wages, they have no benefits, and as a consequence, when they get sick, they can't pay for hospitalization, so they end up on state Medicaid programs so that you and I then have to pay for that through our tax dollars. Do you like doing that? Do you like paying health care benefits for other people so that Walmart can make billions of dollars? Is that something that you appreciate in the free market?
Well, it's not a free market. That's the whole thing. It's not a free market.
Well, it's free for Walmart. They're getting a lot of things for free, like employee benefits. Maybe that's what you think about a free market. I mean, that's not right. Do you think that's right, that a company can do that, that they can pay substandard wages, keep people part-time, not offer benefits, and then offload the costs to American taxpayers?
I guess I don't look at it as a right or wrong, but more as business decisions, and some are better than others. And that people
no, there's also a thing called
say,
gaming
no,
decision.
I'm not going to do that.
It's also called gaming the system, and that we the people have a right through Congress and through state laws and federal laws to say, look, these are the rules of the game, and this is how you're going to play. And if you want to do business in this country, then you're going to do business in an ethical, moral way. You're going to value your workers, and you're going to treat people with respect because we are a country. You know, businesses don't exist independent of the country at large. You know, this country does a lot of things for businesses. We provide infrastructure. We keep this nation's border secure. We have a military to defend the country and the business's property. So the businesses don't exist, Melanie, in a vacuum. We do a hell of a lot of stuff for businesses, and they should reciprocate in kind to we the people. That's how I feel about it. Listen, I appreciate the call. All right, listen, we're going to be back. It is 27 minutes after the hour. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
The Crash of 2016. Check it out at your finest bookstores. Tom's new book. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Tom out and about in Santa Monica tonight from 7 to 9:30. He'll be at the Limley Theater, and check it out, 7 to 9:30. He'll be signing his book, The Crash, Eric, of 2016. But getting back to what Melanie was saying, it's very interesting, and I'm going to get to the callers here in a second, Eric, how these conservatives really look at corporations and businesses as though they are supreme to the human being, supreme to the human condition. I just never really kind of could wrap my arms around why they believe such things. It's very, very bizarre. I mean, think about what she was saying there. It's almost more important to them that the interest of the business.
Well, a lot of people think that the corporations really are truly the ones employing people. I mean, they don't think about the mom and pop shops and all these other smaller businesses.
Right, but they think that these corporations or business exist, again, in a vacuum, independent of real human beings as part of the workforce, as part of the labor. You can't have a business or a company or a corporation without workers. I mean, it's the bottom line. You need people to do the work. So the question is, how do you look at these people? Do you look at them, one, as expendable, as an expense, as a weight, as a burden, as a necessary evil? That's, I think, is basically what conservatives and libertarians look at workers as, that, you know, that they're burdens and they're necessary evils, and that as long as we can get away with paying them as minimal amount as possible with no benefits, and guess what? If they don't like it, they could take a hike and we'll have another schmuck who come by and, you know, they'll take, you know, this dead-end job. That's the libertarian conservative view of what a worker is. But then you also have, you know, an opposing view, the view that kind of I subscribe to, is that, you know what, your workers are, one, they're human beings. You know, they have the gift of life just like you and I do. They are members of the human species. They are members of our country. They're members, they're patriots. They're, you know, our co-workers. They're our family members. They're our children. They're part of a great species, right? The human species. We're all linked together, and that we're all in this together. And that whatever we can do to value those workers, to value their time, to value their labor, to make them part of the team, to respect them, and allow them to sort of live life to its potential fullest, and what we can do as an employer to make that happen, then that's the other side of the equation. Those are the two sort of diametrically opposed views of labor and workers. And I just truly believe that liberals and Democrats value workers. They look at workers as sacrosanct. They look at workers as people on our team and people who are part of our family, and we want them to be happy. We don't want them to have to struggle or, you know, what did George Bush, remember George Bush when he was
uniquely,
you know,
American.
Uniquely American, yeah. What's your name, man? You know, how many kids you have? Oh, I have like four kids.
And I'm working three jobs.
One special needs child, and I'm working three jobs, and, you know, I really have hardly any time to do anything with my family. Wow, isn't that special? Isn't that uniquely American? That's what George Bush said one time when he was at a town hall meeting and interviewed, and this woman gave her story. And I was so sad by her story, but he was, like, excited, like, wow, that's what Americans should
that's
be like.
That's awesome that you have three jobs.
That's awesome that you have three jobs and a special needs kid. And yeah. If you have the audio, just let's play it. I mean,
there's a certain comfort to know that the promises made will be kept by the government. You don't have to worry.
That's good, because I work three jobs, and I feel like I contribute.
You work three jobs?
Three jobs, yes.
Uniquely American, isn't it? I mean, that is fantastic that you're doing that.
And they're clapping, too. Like, you got three jobs. Unbelievable.
I think she was complaining. She wasn't, like, saying
right,
how
no.
happy she,
but,
she
but
was.
Again, a bunch of conservatives at the town hall meeting. They
thought that was awesome.
That was so special. Absolutely special. And then we had a presidential candidate. Somebody was a hair's breadth away, Eric, of actually becoming the president of this country, who subscribed to that very same view, that corporations are more important than people, that they supersede people, that they are people to
they
a certain
people.
Extent. Let's go to this clip. Here we go. Wait, hold on.
Any day now, Mike.
Corporations are people, my friend.
Yeah. Oh, all right. I was going to play it over here, but okay. But anyway, we'll get to that in a second. But yeah, it's unbelievable.
For the coming decades, going to be able to balance our budget and not spend more than we take in, we have to make sure that the promises we make in Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare are promises we can keep. And there are various ways of doing that. One is we could raise taxes on people. That's not the way. Corporations are people, my friend. We can raise taxes on. Of course they are. Everything corporations earn ultimately goes to people. So where do you think it goes? What? Whose pockets? Whose pockets? People's pockets. Okay, human beings, my friend.
So the rich people are humans.
Right. So, but that's Mitt Romney. That's vintage conservative libertarian viewpoints on economics, is that he thinks that the corporation, where does the money go? Well, yeah, you know,
shareholders.
It goes to the Waltons. Okay. He's right in that sense. Yes, you know.
Yes, they are people.
They are people. But so $50 billion, $60 billion each for all the four or five or six, whoever, how many heirs there are. Yeah, that money goes to them. But it doesn't go to the people. But he doesn't want to tax those corporations. He doesn't want to tax the Waltons, you know, because they're already worth $60 billion apiece. You know, it's amazing how they put supremacy for the corporations, these inanimate objects that exist only on paper and that do not have compassion and care and love for our fellow human beings.
A person is run by one brain, correct?
Yes.
And the corporation is run by how many brains?
Well, in certain cases, I would say half a brain. But, all right, listen, let's get back to the listeners and the callers right now, because they want to have their say, and I want to be fair about this. So let me go to Paula, and Paula's listening on WCPT. Paula, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi. Yeah, I was just wanting to say that Peter's analogy is completely false, as you stated, because he was saying, you know, the free market, and we don't have a gun to your head, so you're free to take the job. Everything's free. It's not free, and there is a gun to the head. What's he talking about? If a woman or a man, if their kids are hungry, they have to take the job. They're not free to take the job that fits their needs.
Right.
So
no,
it's completely false.
Paula, I think that's an excellent point, because you often hear libertarians and you often hear conservative economic thinkers say, well, it's a free market and you have every right. If you don't like the job, then don't take it. But again, your point is spot on. What do you do if you're a father and you got three kids at home, you got a wife, you know, there's not a lot of food in the cupboard, there's not a lot of milk in the refrigerator, and what are you supposed to say? Well, just out of pride, I'm not going to take this job because I don't think it really reflects what I value myself as an hourly worker. I mean, you're right. You have to do that. At that point, you have an economic gun pointed to your head. You don't have a literal gun, but you have an economic gun pointed to your head, and you really don't have the choice at that point. And that's why so many people show up for so little jobs at Walmart, because they're desperate. It's not because those are great jobs and they just want it, and, you know, they
wanted to work for Walmart.
Their
life's goal.
Exactly. So, I mean, I agree with you, Paula. Well, listen, thank you for your comment. That was very well said. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Mike. Have a nice day.
You too. All right. She made a great point there, though, Eric. I mean,
absolutely.
Excellent point. Okay, 866-987-THOM. Again, that's 866-987-8466. Three jobs. Can you imagine working three jobs and a president saying that's uniquely American and then a whole bunch of people clapping for
thinking
that?
That's, and he said that's fantastic.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It's see, you know why he says that? Because that makes his job numbers look better. Because she has three jobs, and they'll probably count it as three jobs versus it's only one person.
Well, you know, he understood at the time because he was working for Walmart and was president at
right.
the same time.
So under George Bush's calculations, so if each American worked three jobs, then he would consider that we have 30 million, you know, say if there's a million, that would be 30 million, you know, jobs.
Right. There'd be no jobless.
Right. Exactly. It pumps up the numbers like that. Okay. Let's get back to some of the callers here. Let's see who's next in the queue. I think it is Tom. Tom wants to elaborate on why Peter Schiff was being shifty. Tom, welcome to the program.
Hey, give me some time here. I got a couple points. We've already tried Peter Schiff's experiment. It's called the libertarian paradise of Somalia, where there's no government, no rules, laissez-faire. So we've tried his way versus the USA's way in the late 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, until Reaganomics we had, and in Northern Europe of today, with high wages, high unionization, very competitive, with regulated capitalism, subservient to political free democracy. Now, you touched on this, Mike, where corporations, they think these corporations are supreme, or capitalism is supreme to the human beings or democracy. And I go a little deeper here. These guys on the right, they think freedom stems from capitalism. The liberal thinks freedom stems from democracy. So these guys all think democracy or the people are subservient to capitalism, and that's where I read a book by Kevin Phillips, a former Republican, called Wealth and Democracy, and he talks about this over the last, since Reagan, this inverted way of thinking that the market is our government, and that democracy is subservient, or what you said, I don't know what you said, but yeah, underneath.
Yeah, whatever, subordinate.
Subordinate, right. And that's where, when you're talking to a conservative, just ask them, where do you think freedom stems from? They will always, I mean, almost 99% will say, capitalism, the free market, because the word free is in there, so it's got to be freedom, right? Free market? No. It's democracy, and they think democracy is socialism. What, you want a collective, we the people? That's socialism.
Yeah. So, no, I think you have some excellent points there, Tom. Absolutely. Well, listen, I hear the music. I got to go to a break. But, Tom, thank you so much. Tom is calling in from KTNF in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Excellent points for sure. Okay. Well, the Freedom Express is pulling up to its final stop, its final destination for today. So just give us a call at 866-987-THOM and get your final thoughts in.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman. Check out Tom's official Facebook page and you can continue today's discussion. Okay, welcome back to the final segment today. Don't forget, Tom will be at the Lemley Monica Theater tonight, 1332 2nd Street in Santa Monica, California, from 7 to 9:30. And he'll be signing copies of his book, The Crash of 2016. So if you happen to be in the area, definitely take an opportunity to meet America's most popular progressive radio talk show host and America's most prolific author as well. So let's get back to the Freedom Lines here, Eric, and let's go first up. I think Kathy is listening on Free Speech TV, and I think she got hung up on and was waiting over an hour in Port Townsend, Washington. So, Kathy, we apologize for that.
Well, thank you, Dr. Mike. I appreciate your I applaud your compassion for the worker. I'm all for Walmart getting higher wages. I just want to tell you that I receive disability benefits. I hurt myself on the job. I was making $30,000 at the year. Mm-hmm. At the time of that I hurt myself, I had put in 20 years into the workforce as a single mother because of unsafe conditions. The law, it was written in the law that I would receive a pension for the rest of my life through federal labor and industry and Social Security disability. A lot of people don't like that. They think it's a handout, but I'm very thankful for it. I paid into it, and I I'm so thankful for it. But I just wanted to mention that every year, or when it allows, every other year, sometimes every third year, we get a COLA advance, which is cost of living
adjustments,
allowance. And sometimes it's up to like $78 a month for the federal labor and industry, and usually about $25 a month through Social Security disability. And I think it should be written into the contract of the Walmart workers, their contract, that they should at least get a COLA advance. Like,
well, not only that, Kathy, what I think would be some nice legislation federally for the minimum wage to adjust each and every year based off of the cost of living. I mean, that doesn't the minimum wage, as we've heard earlier in the program, it's been stagnant for years and years and years at $7.25 an hour. I mean, it would be wonderful, I think, at least as a small step forward, to have that COLA adjustment for the minimum wage as well. But listen, I appreciate your call. Thank you for your comments. I'm going to get to some of the other callers right now before we conclude today's program. Let's go to a union worker, a union member, Tom, listening on WCPT. Tom, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hello.
I wanted to call in to say, tell you an experience I had. I worked for a construction company in Chicago. Like I said, I've been in the Carpenters Union for over 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of years ago, I worked for a woman-owned, family-owned small construction company.
Right.
And a couple of years ago, I'm a foreman for them. A couple of years ago, I was called into the president's office for my Christmas bonus. And she said to me, "Thank you, Tom. We appreciate the work you do for us in the field. And we know that we wouldn't make any money at all if we didn't have good people in the field doing good work for us."
Right. That's awesome.
My jaw dropped. I mean, when have you ever heard this in American business?
Right. Right. You well, know, I think that's the way it should be. But the sad thing is, Tom, that's the exception, when in reality it should be the standard.
Right, exactly. Because I'd like to say that, and I say this often, it's going to sound harsh when I say it, but think about it for a minute. We're talking about employers here. Generally speaking, they would gleefully employ slaves if they could. They did throughout history until right thinking people said, that's not right.
Right. I agree with you. But to a certain extent, this libertarian, conservative, Republican, free market approach is, in essence, to a certain extent, it is slavery in disguise. It's slavery light is what it is. It's like the light version of slavery. But it is, nonetheless, slavery. I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, the workers really don't have much of a choice. They don't have any rights. They don't have – look, you're in a union, fortunately, and being part of a union gives you that ability to collectively bargain. But if you are just a lone individual, then you have no chance against a corporation or a business whatsoever, particularly in right-to-work states. They'll tell you to take a long walk off a short pier, and there'll be no repercussions to the business whatsoever. And I don't think that's fair either in society. I think workers should have a voice. Look, why is it, Tom, that you have athletes who make millions and millions and tens of millions of dollars a year, they can have unions. They can have player unions. You can have the NFL Players Union. You can have the National Hockey League Players Union, the Major League Baseball Player Union. And they can go and negotiate with the owners, who are millionaires and billionaires, and come upon an agreement where both parties feel it's fair. But why do millionaires and billionaires have that opportunity to negotiate, but when it comes to an hourly wage worker, that conservative Republicans and libertarians don't want to afford the worker that same collective bargaining opportunity? I find that pretty sad in our society that happens.
Right, exactly. And I would say that, people think that union workers make high wages, and I do. I appreciate that I make a decent living wage as a union construction worker. But I can tell you that probably the last 15 years, I haven't made a union wage. I've made more than a union wage. Back in when the housing boom was going on, before it crashed, I was a foreman for a construction. We weren't even building houses. We were doing highway work. But we were offering carpenters, not just foremen, but carpenters, over the union wage to come and get them to work for us because there was such a demand for workers.
Well, no doubt about it. And let me just let you get going. But what I just wanted to conclude with is that it's interesting how you talk to people, just like the elderly gentleman from Chicago, Eric, who blamed the collapse, if you will, of the steel industry on who?
On the lazy workers.
On the lazy workers. They were making $30 an hour. And, it's anytime you talk to a conservative Republican or a Libertarian, it's always the worker's fault. Like, if the worker's going to make from $30 to $35 an hour, then they're greedy workers. But if it's one of the Walton heirs who gets, instead of $10 billion, $11 billion, that's quintessentially American to them.
That's just the way it's
That's just the way it's supposed to be. But God forbid, if the worker got, you know, a dollar more an hour, $2 more an hour. It's very interesting how this whole idea of compassionate conservatism, I really question where is the compassion in that kind of conservatism. Listen, Dr. Mike, filling in for Tom, will be back on Thursday and Friday. And again, don't forget Tom. Tom will be at Santa Monica tonight. He's in Santa Monica at the Lemley Monica Theater, 1332 2nd Street in Santa Monica from 7 to 9:30. Check it out, the crash of 2016.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. Angie'sList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at Angie'sList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.